convinces me my reasoning sometimes.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and welcome to our panel for this morning. It's Thursday, the 15th of November. Just heard the music of David Wilcox. He's going to be performing at the Linda on Saturday at 8 o'clock. TheLinda.org will be playing his music throughout the morning. You can see the playlist. It's at WAMC.org/roundtable. All right, good morning. Let me introduce everybody to you. Communications consultant Joe Bonilla is with us. We are thrilled. It's been a little while for Joe, and we're very nice to have you back. I know you were in Puerto Rico for a while.
Puerto Rico for Somos, and I was in California just until yesterday, actually.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different climate right now.
Yeah.
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 It's some edge.
In many ways.
Yeah.
Good morning. Nice to have you here. We have our good friend, Times Union columnist Chris Churchill, with us this morning. Good morning, Chris.
How good morning.
Very nice to
Don't
have
call
you
him
here.
A good friend. He'll turn on you.
I'm not going to turn on anybody. What
I don't
does
think
that
he's
mean?
He's turned
not
on anybody.
He can be
turn on a dime.
Tough, yeah.
Judy Patrick is here, Vice President of Editorial Development for the New York Press Association. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Joe.
Nice
and everyone
to
else.
Here. Thank you.
Everyone else?
Everybody out there. Oh, like hundreds of thousands of people. Kind of crazy when you think about it.
Well, I'm flattered.
And WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. He's flattered. Good morning, Alan.
I was flattered because you said everyone else. And I was included.
Hundreds of thousands of people.
There you go. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And we welcome your letters. It'd be wonderful to hear from you and, you know, weigh in on what we're talking about this morning. Okay, so let us go. There's a lot going on. And isn't there always? And let us start with the story. Could start in many different places. I think I'm going to go with the Nancy Pelosi story, though, because we'll do a twofer here. Of course, we know now that House Republicans have chosen Representative Kevin McCarthy as their party leader. You will remember that Paul Ryan is out. He is stepping down at the end of his term in January, so that opened up the top leadership spot, which after the party lost in House majority in last week's midterms, will be minority leader. McCarthy prevailed over Representative Jim Jordan. That was 159 to 43 votes, according to the House press gallery. And McCarthy ascended to the top job leadership while Representative Liz Cheney followed in her father's footsteps by taking the party's number three spot. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, on the Democratic...
No, before you go on, there's something interesting about that. You know, the blue wave hit the House, and of course, they're looking for ways to appear to be more Democratic small d. So they have announced that they're looking now at the idea that the committee members, the various committee members, could elect their own chair. Not in two or three of the big committees, but everything else they would elect, just like at New Paltz or Albany, where we used to elect our own chairs of our academic departments. You know, don't you see?
And so it would be done that way instead of by seniority or...
Leadership saying this is who it's going to be, strengthening leadership. So, you know, this is an ideal time to try to democratize the process when you're out of power.
And this is the House Republicans looking to do this. And
yes.
Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah.
The proposal is part of a broader Thursday debate over internal conference rules, which is taking place today. The biggest proposed change comes from Wisconsin Representative Mike Gallagher, who wants committee members to be able to choose their own chairman and ranking or ranking members. The amendment would exclude the Rules, Budget, and House Administration Committees, the heads of which are appointed by the Republican leader from the member selection process. Under the conference's current rules, the Republican Steering Committee, a panel composed primarily of leadership and regional representatives, nominates committee leaders, and the full conference ratifies those recommendations. So we'll see what happens today. Meanwhile, over on the Democratic side, there is some, I don't know how much intrigue, but Nancy Pelosi is fighting for her House speakership and fighting for the votes. At least 17 people have come forward and said they are not interested in voting, and Nancy Pelosi to be their leader. So she is scrambling to shore up support that she needs to become a speaker again when Democrats take control of the chamber. But a prominent defector says he has the votes to prevent her from regaining the gavel. This is Seth Moulton. He is a Democrat. He is from Massachusetts. He has long opposed Pelosi's returning to the speakership, says he has enough firm commitments from fellow party members that he could defeat the San Francisco Democrat in a floor vote. 100%, he said. We're getting more all the time, but we have enough. Moulton wouldn't say exactly how many votes he has in his pocket or identify the members. Pelosi has faced rebellion in the Democratic ranks before. She has always managed to emerge on top. This time, the struggle could be more difficult. Alan.
Well, look, Nancy Pelosi is, of course, a woman. And in this year of Me Too, the idea of men taking on, you know, a woman and expelling her from actually the top job in the United States that a woman has will bring with it a certain amount of dissonance, I am quite sure, number one. Number two, in order to be the speaker, you need 218 votes, which is half of 435, and the Republicans are not going to help Nancy Pelosi get elected speaker. That's my bet. So therefore, if you've got 17 people who signed the letter, and they say they've got 10 more waiting in the wings, if that's all true, you would win. But then you'd have to decide on who the candidate was going to be. We don't know that. The Republicans did a job on Nancy Pelosi. They made her into a terrible figure in the United States, and they went after her with everything they had, and they used a lot of money to do it, and they ran against her. And so there are some people who are saying in the Democratic ranks, this is a propitious time to do it, and who needs her? So one would think that there is at least an outside chance that they'll depose her.
You know, I don't think this is all that's going on, but I think a big part of this is just pure sexism. It's okay for women to get in leadership positions, but if they're effective or if they're a threat, we're going to tear them down and demonize them in a way that they wouldn't do to a man. Mm-hmm.
Is that fair, though? I mean, a lot of the people who have signed among the 17 are female candidates. They're part of this new kind of fresh progressive wave, including I can't say her name right now.
Octavia
Cortez. But I mean, these people aren't sexist. They just are kind of opposing this kind of sclerotic corporate kind of leadership that has been in charge of the Democrats for a long time. I mean, make no mistake about why Nancy Pelosi is there. She's there because she's a prodigious fundraiser. Right. I mean,
and an effective leader in terms of corralling the votes she needed to get Obamacare passed,
right,
and to do a lot of very important things. And certainly there are some women who are objecting, but they don't really have, aside from the corporate influence, which I agree is very detrimental to all of us. I think that they are reacting to the demonization of her by the Republicans. In essence, the Republicans are deciding that Nancy Pelosi is not going to be leader.
I think the Republicans would be thrilled if she stays.
Probably, because they can still vilify her.
Well, but, right. Yeah. She can be
I mean, she's a great foil for Trump. She's, you know, but go ahead.
But here's the thing. Is it more of a reflection of both caucuses becoming more left and more right? I mean, we saw the same thing with the Republicans, you know, a few years back with John Boehner. He was not conservative enough for them. So it's the same way. Basically, the Democrats are now feeling that same reckoning for Pelosi, that maybe they were looking for somebody who is more progressive in their eyes.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, Pelosi saw this coming because she did talk from the very beginning about how she would be a transitional leader, meaning vote for me this time and I'll get out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an easy question. You can raise or wonder whether Antonio Delgado wins in the 19th if Pelosi is not the speaker, right? I mean, she was very successful in, again, fundraising and getting money to these candidates in contested districts. But on the other hand, there is kind of, leadership changes are often good things. It's good to have fresh faces and fresh ideas.
I mean, she's been the leader of the Democratic caucus now for 15 years, and that's a long time when you think about that. When you look at the Republican side, where basically leaders last for maybe 5-6 years.
Yeah, but not as speaker.
Not as speaker, of course not.
So that it's one thing to be the minority leader. It's another thing to be you know, to be the speaker. That's a lot of power in this country.
You know, if the Democrats really want to be effective, though, they have to decide who's going to be an effective leader for them. And I'm not sure any real viable candidate has emerged that can be effective. If you listen to her the day after the election, she seemed to be on board with being a centralizing, compromising figure that can move the party forward. I mean, I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. So, but
well,
from my perspective,
anyway?
I'm a unaffiliated voter. Mm-hmm. But from where I stand, I have seen too many women get into positions of power, and you get too high up there, they will cut you down.
But everybody who gets into positions of power eventually gets cut down. I mean, that just comes with the territory.
It's part of the arc.
Sure, you can make fun of Mitch McConnell and how he looks, and you can make fun of Paul Ryan a little bit, but not nearly the demonization that Pelosi got, or even Hillary Clinton. I don't want to, you know, break new ground here, but I see it happen in all sorts of industries.
I think you're right about that.
So what do you think is going to happen over the next? I mean, this is a decision that's going to have to come pretty soon, right?
Well, I think barring any sort of, you know, last-minute surprise, I would expect Pelosi to be reelected as Speaker.
Yeah, I would, too. I mean, it's the fundraising. It all comes down to the fundraising.
Yeah. So even though he says he has the votes, you don't think he has the votes?
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting because a lot of people, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, now I can say her name, have promised that they wouldn't vote for her. And they're going to be put on the spot right off the bat. And it's not going to look good if they, you know, their first vote is basically a promise break.
We all know that, as we've said around here a number of times, that the Democrats promptly form themselves upon winning into a circular firing squad, and this will be one more piece of that proof.
Well, I think Pelosi will let some of them not vote for her, and then she'll try to figure out some way where they can save face some of the ones that are the most at risk.
We call this letting them off the hook. Otherwise, they're in the tank.
They'll vote present or something like that.
Yeah.
So as that all comes into focus, we also have the anybody want to say anything about Kevin McCarthy? No big surprise there, right?
No big surprise. Nah. What will be interesting, though, that if both, you know, now with McCarthy now as Republican leader, and if Pelosi stays, I mean, you'll have two leaders of the House, both from California. So that is one interesting note.
Mm. All right, let's go to other stories, and we'll talk about the president yesterday. Some weird thing happened where there was some bipartisan criminal justice reform bill that has been endorsed by the president. This is the president throwing his support behind legislation that would loosen some mandatory minimum sentencing laws, a measure backed by powerful Senate Republicans and Democrats, but which could run into opposition from some tough on-crime conservatives. At an afternoon event at the White House yesterday, Trump officially endorsed the First Step Act, which he said included reasonable sentencing reforms while keeping dangerous and violent criminals off the streets. He urged lawmakers to send him a bill saying, quote, "I'll be waiting with a pen." The announcement shows true bipartisanship is possible, according to the president. This is a big breakthrough for a lot of people. They've been talking about this for many, many years. How big a deal should we make of this?
Well, I think you have to make a big deal about it. I mean, I think it's long overdue. Look, we do know that racism in the criminal justice system is huge, and that a lot of people are coming to the recognition that something has to be done about that. We have Governor Cuomo in New York saying, okay, I'm going to make sure that everybody has the right to vote, even if they've been in prison for a while. I think that he is also looking over his shoulder in two ways. Way number one is, there but for the grace of God goes I. You know, maybe you know, I'm going to be facing a criminal sentence.
Who are you talking about, Trump or
Trump,
Cuomo?
Okay. Yeah, well, Trump, you know, I don't want some judge having to only have a prescribed number of years that he has to give out or she has to give out in that. And the other thing is, you know, you now have a House of Representatives, so that while he's surely going to attack that Democratic House, he is also aware that he has to be able to say, I am capable of reaching a certain amount of compromise. And there's a third piece here, and I'd have to read the bill again, but it has to do with the guns. And that is that he is loosening, as I understand it, in this compromise bill, he is loosening the amount of time or something like that, that people who commit crimes with guns may have to serve. Now, you know, here's the NRA out there saying it's never the person, it's never the gun, it's always the person who commits the crime. But here is loosening up some of the stuff on some of the potential, you know.
Yeah, but the overwhelming majority of these are drug. You're talking about drug crimes, and you know sometimes small amount of possession, small amounts of possession, and you know, this. Whatever Trump's motivations may be, I think this is clearly a good thing, right? I mean, this,
I think it is.
The mass incarceration that took place because of policies enacted in the 1990s has been terrible for our society in most regards. Although there has also been a corresponding crime drop, and you can argue about how much those two things are linked.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be linked at all, but you probably wouldn't be getting criminal justice reform without the crime drop, right? I mean, people feel safer, so they're not as they're more willing to be lenient.
You think
we have to take a break, but sure. We'll pause there. And when we come back, we'll continue. You're listening to the Roundtable. Alan, Judy, Chris, Joe. We'll be right back after this.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It is by my calculation, it's Thursday morning. It's 9:34. Ray now suddenly in for Joe Donahue, and the panel today is Judy Patrick, VP of Editorial Development for the New York Press Association. We have communications consultant Joe Bonilla, Times Union columnist Chris Churchill, and our own Alan Shartok. The email address is panel@wamc.org. You know the drill. I'm sure Joe explained it to you. Try to keep the letters brief. No abbreviations, yada, yada, yada. One a day per customer. panel@wamc.org. All right, panel. I must confess, I was preparing a newscast, and so I didn't hear the first half of the show or the first half hour. What have we discussed, and what are we about to discuss?
That was some sparkling conversation you missed.
Really?
Ooh. Oh, when did that start? It was great radio.
It was absolutely fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, we might have a what's the best award you can get in radio? Because whatever it is, we're going to get it.
Times two.
The award for the best half, first half hour.
We were in the middle of criminal justice reform when last we talked.
And we like it.
And we like it.
You like criminal justice reform.
I shouldn't speak for everybody. Yeah. I like
it. We all liked it.
We're big fans.
I think we're all kind of surprised and suspicious about how it happened and not quite sure.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have happened if Sessions didn't resign last week either. I think that's what was a huge roadblock for this as well. Yeah, I do.
Could be. Well, anyway, we had a letter from Ted. Can I read it?
That'd be great.
You're allowed. Absolutely.
Let's check with Joe.
Okay. Ted said, Pelosi's transition. We talked about Pelosi. Pelosi's transition says Dems should reelect Pelosi and have a peaceful transition, in quotes, later. Don't start the new term by shooting at each other. Now, we know the Democrats are predisposed to killing each other every time they seize power. I'm old enough to tell you in New York State, that's a long tradition. They once got power in the New York State Senate years ago, and they immediately began to kill each other. So that's the kind of thing we have to worry about, I suppose, if you're a Democrat. And Keith says, the next Speaker of the House, Beto O'Rourke? Yeah, right. The Speaker of the House does not have to be a current member of Congress. How about a former member of Congress, Beto O'Rourke? He was a six-year member of the House, so he has experience. He would be a fresh face to lead the caucus, and he can raise money, is charismatic, and is a person who Democratic voters love. Beto would be able to keep a high profile if he chooses to run for president. And that's from Keith. And I know that Keith knows, because he was in a hurry to get this thing done, that the word Democrat is capitalized.
You know, when you read it over the air, no one knows.
Yeah, but I thought I mentioned
it. It's important to point out grammar errors when you're reading the letters,
And our wonderful friend Daisy. Daisy is terrific. Writes about Pelosi. I don't like Seth Moulton. He's a bully, and he's running for president. But he's playing it smart by supporting an African-American congresswoman from Ohio as speaker to replace Pelosi. Careful what you wish for. No one is as good at wrangling cats than Pelosi. why not let her stay on as Speaker for two more years? She said she'll resign after that. Not exactly. She said she was transitioning, which is not, I will resign after 2 years. She will resign after that. And we need her expertise in these next 2 years. And that's from our very good friend and constant correspondent, Daisy.
Thank you, Daisy.
Well, the one thing I will say is that, I mean, the Democrats do definitely need to actually have more younger voices as part of leadership. You know, you did have Joe Crowley that was knocked out in the primary. You have Jim Clyburn and Steny Hoyer, who were also up there in age, similar to Pelosi. So it would behoove Democrats to actually put into power younger members at this point as well.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
Why not?
Maybe, well, because I'm 77, but it may be that you're right that we should, that the Democrats should show a face, a younger face.
I mean, well, instead of maybe it's not about age, maybe it's about fresh thinking too. I mean, some of these people have been there forever, and they're, you know, they're not exactly. What am I looking for?
Yeah, well, let me clarify. I didn't mean by age, but by seniority. So obviously younger members in terms of their actual tenure in Congress.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons Donald Trump got elected, because he hadn't been in office forever. And so that
no question.
Maybe something the electorate is responding to. At the end of the day, it's Democrats, and they get to choose who their leader is.
No question. You're right about that. I mean, I still am of the opinion that Bernie could be the president right now. But what we didn't know was that the electorate did not want an establishment type.
Would have, could have, should have.
So Judy's saying, how long are you going to hammer that point? It's been 2 years now.
Oh, okay.
And you know what? Listen to Judy.
We didn't. I think we can pretty much always assume the electorate doesn't want an establishment type. Well, maybe that's not true. Cuomo won big a few a week ago, but you know, I mean, I think people often want fresh faces and fresh ideas.
And one of the ways that Cuomo won, of course, was by attacking the current president of the United States. Apparently, he didn't even have an opponent in the election because he didn't mention his name. It worked.
Well, our email address here is panel@wamc.org. It's the Roundtable Panel on WAMC. And we have Judy Patrick here, Joe Bonilla, Chris Churchill, Alan Shartok. Of course, Chris Churchill and Judy Patrick from the newspaper biz. And so being journalists, I thought we may discuss a broadcast journalist who is in court at the moment, Jim Acosta, CNN, saying, give me my pass back. And apparently a judge may rule on this today. Who wants to go first?
Go for it, Judy.
All right. So my initial reaction to this was, this is silly, ridiculous. Somebody should just, they should have a call where it gets resolved amicably. But in retrospect, I'm thinking about, this is a very symbolic move. I think that the judge should rule in CNN's favor, because every newspaper, every radio station, every news outlet across the country deals with this on a day-to-day basis. There are going to be mayors, superintendents of schools, town supervisors, company people who run companies, call up the editor and say, I'm not going to talk to this guy anymore. And if a judge says that that's okay, that's going to happen all over the world. And the point is, people shouldn't be allowed to pick and choose who covers them and who doesn't. Just because a question asked is rude doesn't mean it's not correct. Certainly there are a lot of reporters who have access to the press, but my other point is these press briefings are essentially useless anyways. No real news ever comes out of them. But reporters should be allowed access to the White House so they can ask other people questions and maybe get straighter answers than they get.
Well,
from
reporters
the president.
The question is, I guess, is a constitutional one. Do they have a constitutional right to a press pass? Which I would say would be on rather shaky ground.
Well, the judge,
I'm not sure what the legal basis for that would be.
And the judge in the questioning yesterday didn't seem terribly sympathetic to the view that they have that right, that the reporters have that right. We're going to see what he does this afternoon when he renders his opinion. But, you know, it's just a matter of what the judge says. And I think, look, the thing that interests me, and I mentioned this to Judy earlier, is that on the Media Project, is that remember that Trump called on Acosta.
Well, that's why I think Acosta going to get his press. I mean, Trump loves the fight. Acosta loves the fight. It benefits both of them. I think I agree with Judy on the point that it's kind of silly in the larger.
What silly? You mean having
the whole fight? I mean,
It's about the hard pass versus obviously the regular pass too.
Yeah,
and they refused him a day pass when he asked for it. Yeah. I think he has stronger grounds on due process because he wasn't even notified until he went to the gate and was told by a security guard. I don't even know if they ever really gave him a written reason why they rescinded the pass.
But it's the White House, right? Do you need due process to say, well, sorry, you can't come in?
It is an arm of the government. You would think that they would have some respect for the rule of law.
Well, that's the argument. That's the argument that it is the press conference. The White House is owned by the people. That the president, you know, is a functionary in that White House, and that therefore, you know, you should make it clear that he deserves his pass. You know, if I were a betting man here, I'd bet no. I'd bet the judge says you don't have that right.
The judge is a Trump appointee, apparently.
So I would bet that the judge says no, and then Acosta gets his press back.
Yeah, sure. Press you're right about
relatively
it.
So basically a split.
As always, yeah. Chris, you're always right.
Now, I have not been listening as often as I should, and I'm sure you've discussed the initial incident with Acosta. And Chris, have you been on since then?
I have not been on since then.
What was your take on that whole press conference, and in particular, that exchange?
I thought Acosta was did think he was showboating a little bit and was a little bit. I love a good aggressive question, and I think there's a good way to do it and a bad way to do it. I think he went into it expressing his opinion. I like the way, to go back in time, like Sam Donaldson would ask his question. It would be a good, tough question, and then he would listen to, and then demand a follow-up, and then, you know, sit down and let somebody else take their turn. Well, I do think Acosta was showboating, and I think he does it a lot.
Well, you're a columnist, but you've been a reporter. You've been in press conferences. Has a major public figure ever treated you shabbily?
Yeah, they do. I mean, but that's just part of the job. If you're going to have a job like that, you have to have thick skin, and you have to accept the fact that you're going to be, you know, lied to or treated shabbily at times. But, there's still a professional way to go about doing your job.
These press conferences, though, are ridiculous from both sides. The president doesn't answer questions. He speaks over the reporters as they're trying to ask a question. But you know what? Most press conferences are like that. You never really get straight answers to your questions when you're a reporter asking it in a press conference.
Sure,
but these have gotten insane.
Sure.
They're not effective whatsoever.
Sure, we were contacted during one of these programs. Everybody showed up at the door here. Remember that, Ray?
What was it?
And said, well, you know, the governor wants to do the Capitol connection this week. So I went out and I asked him all the questions you're supposed to ask. And he didn't answer most of them. You know, I say, are you running for president? You know, he didn't answer. He didn't say yes. He didn't say no. That's the way politicians are.
Well, it's always the advisement of answer the question you would like to ask.
That sounds like a communications consultant.
Yeah, because we're on the other side. I mean, that's the thing. But at the same time, you know, you have to have that effective relationship between, obviously, let's say a PR person or a communication professional and a journalist. It just can't be basically one side or the other.
I think you ask a tough question, and then if you don't get the answer, you ask it again. But I think with the problem with what Acosta did is, I mean, first of all, he stood up and said, I'm going to challenge you, which is a little bit of a strange way to ask a question. And then he expressed his opinion, which was that the caravan was not an invasion. Now, that may be true, but, you know, I think a reporter does better when they ask, don't keep their opinion aside, ask the question, and then let the audience decide what to make of the president's answer.
Judy, you mentioned that nothing really happens at these press conferences of note. So my question for Judy Patrick, journalist, would you rather have press conferences where nothing happens, or would you be complaining when there are no press conferences?
You know, it's a very good question, right? Because back in the day when you had a more normal president, they would ask questions and then they would get these rote answers or these memorized answers that were more rational, more normal, but they really but they just gave the company line. So how productive were those as well? Not often. They didn't often make news. When I'm talking about nothing really newsworthy comes out of the press conference, sure, when he says these wild and crazy things, it can make news, but it shouldn't make the top of the paper.
Oh, boy. This is a first in radio history. Alan Shartok is reminding me about a break. So let's take a break here. 800. Oh, no, that's Vox Pop later on. Stand by, Ray. Thrown into the breach here. We'll take a quick break on the roundtable panel. Judy Patrick, Joe Bonilla, Chris Churchill, Alan Shartok, and you at panel@wamc.org. If you want to write us, we'll be right back.
hounds like a hell of a helicopter hovering over the alley, cutting the...
Welcome back to the Roundtable. That's David Wilcox. The album is View from the Edge, and David will be at the Linda on the 17th, which is Saturday, right? Saturday the 17th?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And that is at 8 p.m. And you know who's also at that gig, warming up the show, is Lonesome Val and the Lonesome Units.
No.
The Units, by the way, were a just in the 70, late 70s and 80s, were the about the premier Albany independent rock band way back when. I'm sure Judy remembers.
I was studying back in the
70s. Oh, really? No, I wasn't. Okay, so there you go. That's at the Linda on Saturday night, 8 p.m., David Wilcox with Lonesome Val and the Lonesome Units. It's the Roundtable panel, and Ray is in for Joe, which was a surprise to both of us. And the email address is panel@wamc.org. We'll play a game in a moment, but let's read some letters.
Denise says, I support Nancy Pelosi in the move to push Marsha Fudge to the front won't work with black women like me. Fudge is one of the two Democratic members who refuses to co-sponsor the Equality Act, which would extend civil rights protections to sexual orientation and gender identity. Seth Moulton isn't fooling anyone, using Fudge as a front for the five white guys trying to oust Pelosi. You sort of said something like that, didn't you, Judy? Not exactly, but you're a Pelosi fan.
Right. I just think when you look at the record, Pelosi's been effective, and then when you look at people who are opposed to Pelosi, they're really not articulating strong reasons for not supporting her.
Uh-huh. And Ilias says in his daily tweet, Pelosi, a comparison of Pelosi's voting record with Paul Ryan's will show that she overwhelmingly supports workers, consumers, and the middle class, and that Ryan is unfailingly on the side of big business. Why the Democrats don't point out this message is beyond me. P.S. Brindisi's lead is increasing in the early county. And Brindisi, of course, is up there in Utica running against good old
Claudia Tenney.
Yeah. And he's facing a recount here, and that's very interesting. It'll be one more blue seat, whatever. A.C. says, letter. That's what it says,
okay.
Letter. That a woman in the House wants to vote against Nancy Pelosi doesn't mean that sexism isn't at play. As bell hooks reminds us, patriarchy knows no gender. And that's Amy from Salisbury, Connecticut.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah, sister.
Sister.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. And then Jeremy says, guns. Hi, panel. It's amazing that the NRA uses people as the problem, not guns, while completely opposing any form of gun reform to prevent those people from receiving guns. Their philosophy seems a little backwards. And that's Jeremy from Pokwag, who identifies himself and says, I'm a lifelong responsible gun owner. All right. And then you guys are always welcome to
chime in. Mm-hmm. Alan was waiting. He was giving you a chance, Chris. Yeah.
Michael says, mandatory minimums always disproportionately affect young, low-income persons. I wonder if the emphasis and changing the sentencing comes as a result of opioid epidemic affecting more affluent parts of our society, Michael in Albany.
It's an interesting idea. I don't know. I think it has more to do with just people realizing that, mass incarceration is not something a democratic society should embrace, and also because crime has dropped so much that people are not as afraid of crime as they were in the 1990s.
Yeah, one of the key provisions of this is that it grandfathers in the sentencing for the differentiation for the crack cocaine versus powder cocaine. A lot of the sentences weren't grandfathered in. They aren't retroactive, but this is expected to be very very beneficial to a lot of the people of color who were incarcerated because they possess crack cocaine.
Another thing too is that a lot of these people are sitting in jail on marijuana crimes, and marijuana is becoming legal in a good number of states.
And we expect to hear from Albany DA David Soares this morning regarding policy on
changes,
marijuana.
Yeah.
So we will see what happens there.
So, to say that people should be, that's part of it, too. Our attitudes toward the drugs have changed as well.
Well, yes. And there always has been a certain inequality. If you lived on Park Avenue and you smoked your dope on the 16th floor, You know, that'd be one thing as opposed to under a lamppost on Lexington Avenue in New York, right? So therefore, it's always been two-tiered in terms of who gets
arrested. Yeah, I wrote a column. I forget what the timeline was, but I looked at a certain period of time, and every single person who'd been arrested on a marijuana charge in the city of Albany was black. Now, you can't tell me that only black people in Albany smoke marijuana. I'm sure, you know, there are a big college population here. I'm sure they could arrest lots of people in that population of marijuana charges, but they don't. You know, it's the enforcement is completely out of whack and disproportionate.
Speaker of the House, says Steve, what is the process of changing the rules of the House? Would it be beneficial to the House to reform the speakership to have less power? Got to think about that. I think it's true that there is something, and I've quoted it many times by Robert Michels, called the Iron Law of Oligarchy. Pretty soon, everybody within a particular group, like Democrats or Republicans of the House, gets to be the head person. In other words, there's always one person who calls the shots. Isn't that right? I mean, in your newsroom, Judy, when you were the head of the Schenectady paper, in the end, it came down to you, didn't it?
Well, you know, but when you think about democracy, when I was a young, when I was a student, when I first realized that actually people in the Assembly or Senate don't all have a vote, that the kind of vote is a block, that you don't, I wish that you could go back to that kind of pure democracy where you didn't have leadership voting as a block. And that's why you have, in Albany, three men in a room deciding everything.
And that's why, I quoted it earlier, they are coming up with a new set of rules, the Republicans who have lost because they're seen as elitist, so that the Republicans on a particular committee can elect their own leader. Now, I remember once at New Paltz, where we were electing a chairman, I believe it was a chairman that we were going through, that it almost came to fisticuffs.
Oh.
And I was heard to be yelling, "Hold me back. Hold me back."
Yes. And nobody was, but you still held back.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Okay. And then Jeremy says, guns. It's amazing that the NRA uses people as the problem and not guns while completely opposing any form of gun reform. Did we read this already?
It sounds familiar.
I don't know, but it sounds great. Do it again.
Somebody, two people have the exact same opinion.
Their philosophy seems a little bit backwards. And Vincent says, sadly, what is morally right and what is legally binding are often at odds with each other. As I understand it, legally the president can pull anybody's press pass. It is not a right. Vince from Kingston.
Our number. Jeez, I'm getting ready for Vox Pop. You know what Vox Pop is today?
No.
Model trains.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
No
Oh, you're
kidding.
Interested?
Not particularly.
Call, call in.
I think they're setting
I might have
up
to call in.
In
the Berkshires, model trains are huge.
No.
And our, you know, Bob Norris is a model train enthusiast.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Now, that I'll start the show with that today, too. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Good morning, panel, says Megan. If Pelosi and Cortez were heart surgeons and you were going in for heart surgery, would you rather be the latter's first patient or the former's thousandth? I think the choice is clear. As much as I like Cortez and as little as I like the baggage that Pelosi brings with her, I do think Pelosi ought to be the next speaker, and I'm 30 years younger than Alan.
Wow.
Well, that's okay, except she spelled Alan wrong, so it invalidates the entire letter. Okay.
Well, the Pelosi criticism, though, I mean, yes, there's the longevity factor, but it's a lot of it is about the fundraising. I mean, she and Chuck Schumer are very, very closely tied to a lot of industries that, you know, the finance world, the tech world, and people feel rightly that that influences the way that they, the kind of laws that we get.
I was going to ask you, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
But yet, it's generally a bad thing. I mean, if you look at the blockbuster Facebook story in the New York Times today and look at Chuck Schumer's role in protecting Facebook, I mean, he also happens to be the guy who gets more money from Facebook than anybody else.
Interesting because many people are crediting Pelosi with the blue wave because she was able to raise the money that it needed to go blue.
Right.
And also to keep her candidates or the Democratic candidates on message to talk about health care reform and not go after
impeachment.
Yeah,
nicely said. Scott says, Sherrod Brown. I went to school with Sherrod Brown, says Scott. He is still a salt of the earth guy and intensely high energy under the famously rumpled exterior. He has always been the true champion of the working class and consistently reelected in Ohio. Sherrod for president.
Okay, well, thank you. We'll take a break at that point. Alan Chartok is here, Judy Patrick, Chris Churchill, and Joe Bonilla. It's the Roundtable panel, and there's more to come. You can write us at panel@wamc.org. We will take a break for news and be back.
Few hikers climb this high as I was all alone. Stumbling down.
There you have it. David Wilcox from the album View from the Edge. David will be at the Linda on Saturday night at 8 p.m. thelinda.org for more information. It's the Roundtable Paddle. It's at 10:05 on a Thursday morning before the snow. I'm petrified, I got to tell you. We have Judy Patrick, Joe Bonilla, Chris Churchill, and Alan Chartok on the panel. Ray in for Joe. And this was all news to me. I tell you what, I have no idea what's on the topic list today. I usually like to prepare. I bring my papers in when I'm hosting the show. I have no idea what it is. So we'll play roulette. We will spin the wheel. And then Judy Patrick gets to pick the next topic and spin. What topic?
Let's talk about the Saudi government saying today that they are going to seek the death penalty for five people they have targeted as responsible for the killing of Khashoggi. That's the White House columnist who was murdered in Turkey about a month ago. People at the Washington Post and, in fact, around the world are saying the Saudi government needs to be held accountable. Just how far up that accountability will rise is yet to be determined.
So let's assume that the Crown Prince did organize the whole thing. And now he says, sorry, you have to be executed in order to preserve my...
All five of you, right.
Yeah, it's a very, very fair system they have going over there.
Yeah, and will the world be satisfied with that? I mean, as a conclusion or a resolution of this case. I think the Turkish government is still saying we want more information because it happened on Turkish soil.
But is an embassy Turkish soil?
I think if they dispose of the body outside the embassy in some sort of remote location, then...
Well, that's a littering offense. In other words, if the murder is on sovereign soil, then Turkey, doesn't really have much of a say, right?
Well, what's so fascinating about the whole thing is how first we heard that there was a recorded part of the conversation. By the time it was all over, every leader in the world had had the actual, the thing, the whole thing. It was all, every embassy is apparently wired. You know what I mean?
I think that most embassies realize that. I think, sure. But I think Turkey doesn't want to admit it.
But the question is, Judy, you said, well, will the world be satisfied with it? My question is, what happens if the world is not satisfied with it?
I know. Will it change anything that America does in reference to its relationship with Saudi Arabia?
I mean, I don't think anyone's very satisfied with the answers out of Saudi Arabia point.
The world should be much more upset about what's going on in Yemen than they should be about Khashoggi anyways. I mean, it's nice that people care that much about a journalist. And, as a journalist, I care about other journalists. But, Saudi Arabia is responsible for horrible, horrible things in Yemen and in its own country. And, it shouldn't have taken Khashoggi for people to take a closer look at what Saudi Arabia is up to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But does it change the dynamic?
Well, I think it certainly, you look at the PR blitz that Mohammed bin Salam did last year in terms of trying to say, I'm a more progressive leader for Saudi Arabia. This definitely is a huge dent in that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the world definitely is now starting to see
that.
It was
a baloney from the get-go.
Oh, right. But, some people did believe it.
And the mainstream press is in many respects responsible for that. They treated him like the new pop star.
He let women drive.
Watch movies. Things like
watch movies.
Go to soccer games.
Yeah, but a lot of times, leaders like this will use one symbolic, not symbolic, I mean it's a meaningful thing, but they'll do one thing, they'll open up a system in one way, knowing that that'll get them enough positive attention that they can do all these other terrible things at the,
I was
at
being
the same
somewhat,
time.
I was being somewhat sarcastic. No. I couldn't I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. But what's happening in Yemen is being done with the tacit support of the United States well. And I mean,
we're helping.
Hundreds of thousands of even civilians are being killed in this. And I think America needs to pay better attention
We refuel the planes that drop the bombs. It's more than tacit support. It's explicit support.
Active. Right.
Active, yeah.
Well, our email address here is panel@wamc.org. Well done, Judy Patrick.
Thank you.
Playing Roundtable Roulette here.
I won $200, didn't
I? Yes, you did.
Ooh. And the whole, double or nothing.
And the home version of the Roundtable, which is really, it's a lot of fun. You have a couple of drinks. Alan, letters, sir.
Okay. So we heard from Myron, who says, as a female jock in a small central Pennsylvania high school, I had high hopes that when Title IX became law, time marched on and I learned Title IX had no teeth. Fast forward to today. My aspirations to break the glass ceiling, overachieving, and Me Too still haven't opened the eyes of intelligent men. The comment that what is happening to Ms. Pelosi isn't, quote, sexist, is a daily tragedy coming from men. Men, in capital letters, are essential to change how the world views and treats women. And this is all underlined in the next sentence. I know these same men have women and female children they love and adore. So please, in capital letters, please wake up. And that's from Mir. Now it's spelled M-Y-R-R-H. So I don't know how you pronounce that. I said Meyer, but the way to do that properly, I believe, is to say Meyer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Know, I would like to say that Title IX has made a significant impact on women in athletics because when I was in high school, women were cheerleaders, but they didn't do athletics other than that. And today, they are young women are doing all sorts of athletics. And I think that's a really positive step because it gives them self-confidence. It helps them develop a whole different part of their selves.
Just to go back to sexism, I'm not saying that sexism doesn't play a role in the way people perceive Pelosi, but to say that she's being deposed simply because she's a woman, I think, is not accurate. Maybe it probably is true that women in public life are demonized more aggressively than their male counterparts. I mean, what about Betsy DeVos? What about Sarah Palin? They're demonized in ways that their male counterparts were not, but it definitely exists. But I just think the Pelosi debate is about much more than that.
But I think the Republicans are using sexism as a tool to demonize her because they don't want her as I think they don't want her as speaker because I think she'll be effective.
Well, I think Joe said earlier they do want her.
Yeah, they do.
Because
they definitely do
demonized
want her.
Yeah.
I think they win either way. If they have Pelosi, Trump has a great foil. If they don't have Pelosi, is not in charge, you could have chaos, and then you know that benefits Republicans too.
And George says a Machiavellian idea. Here's an idea: the Democrats should elect a moderate Republican as Speaker of the House. Then,
really,
go on.
Okay, and
then when the Mueller report provides the basis for impeachment of both Trump and Pence, the Senate might actually be inclined to vote for removal. I heard a tongue-in-cheek letter. Okay.
You sounded like Tom Brokaw there for a second. Huh? That was pretty good.
Okay, I like him. And Michael says, Jim Acosta, Michael from Claverack, I should say, why should the conduct of a journalist be held to a higher standard than that of the President of the United States?
Okay.
Oh, the point being that both of them are rude?
Yes, I think so, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Michael says, from Clifton Park, of all places, Trump alleged that the Mueller investigation was a mess and that staff were screaming at each other. Any chance this was a projection? Mike from Clifton Park. I think that one speaks for itself because apparently the White House is in chaos. You know what I mean? Are you looking at?
Well, we've heard of it.
Chris, I mean, that's you should see the look Chris Churchill is giving out. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's been the story from day one in the White House, even though the White House will refuse to admit that. And we're hearing reports today about how angry the president is.
Yeah, but I mean, that's been the get-go from the
using
day
a
one.
Using a P-word.
Yeah, but you won't use that P-word on this station because it's public radio, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The P-word.
The P-word.
There are many P-words.
Right? Yeah, well,
it's
many,
many pages in the dictionary.
This is the urination word.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that P-word.
Where's Donahue?
Right.
Jamie says,
good Lord.
Trump and reporters. The president should have no right to pick and choose what reporter covers them. However, news agencies should be cognizant what disfavor will mean to access. Also, do not think that Trump's attacks have anything to do with his prejudices or like or dislike of a reporter. The truth is, his brain is dysfunctional, and when he has to think, he panics and lashes out. I would bet Trump would not remember the details of his outburst 10 minutes after the event. I'd like to speak to this for a moment and just say it is not unusual for politicians to do this kind of thing. I remember once years and years ago when the Times Union, your paper, had a guy covering Mayor Corning and he came, and there was a big scandal, as I remember it, about people's tickets being
fixed.
That's the word. Thank
fixed.
You. Fixed.
Fixed.
That's right.
Ding.
Right.
2 points.
That's right. And we're being fixed. And the mayor said, "Okay, I'm never talking to that guy again." That was the end. That was the end.
Yeah, just to, I would say though that the president doesn't have any control over who covers him. I mean, you're talking about a press pass, but I mean, some of the best coverage is done by people who aren't there every day.
But he does have the problem. He does have the power to pick people.
And well, he picks him in the press conference anyways. He said, I mean,
he picked Acosta.
I know. Right. And then, yeah,
there were 100 people in that room.
And that goes back to the Trump loves this, and this actually probably helps him in the long run with his base.
It takes time off. Yeah. It takes attention off the Mueller report, for example. Right?
And it took attention off the Democratic success the day before in the election.
Sure. Sure.
But do you think that that then is the strategy, or this is just spur of the moment? Well, let's get in Acosta's face.
Well, I also think that maybe Trump can't see Acosta's face, because he does wear glasses, and he didn't wear glasses during the press conference.
I think he knew who he was.
And then he realized, oh, it's Jim.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe he fired Jeff Sessions that very same day.
You
and
betcha.
The lead story on CNN that day was all about Acosta. You know, this does benefit the president.
And Barbara takes a shot. She says, "Panel, you are discussing distracting questions. It's not whether a reporter is rude, professional, or competent. The question is, does the president have the right to deny a press pass from a reporter of a news agency, and whether he did this over a trumped-up charge?" Barbara from Long Meadow, Massachusetts. Well, Barbara, we did discuss this earlier in the program, and maybe you aren't there at the moment.
And the judge will decide that today, presumably. Yeah. A Trump-appointed judge, so we'll see what happens.
Right, and there's some discretion. I mean, if I applied for a press pass to the White House, I probably would be denied. There are thousands of reporters at work in America. I mean, the presidential presidents, even under Obama, they were becoming more lenient in terms of granting press passes to people who were bloggers, new kinds of reporters.
People from other
nations. But there is discretion involved. It's
right,
true.
Right. Right, you are, Judy. Should I continue?
You should.
Mm-hmm. So that's from Barbara. Okay, and now from Lisa. "Thank you, panel, for being there. My thoughts in Pelosi. She is an experienced hand keeper. I agree with Alan's point that lesser Democratic candidates are responding to and appear to be joining the Republican bashing of Pelosi. Her corporate fundraising, well, I don't want the Democratic Party candidates to stop if the Republicans aren't. We need a unilateral disarmament agreement. Media buys to counter Republican lies are not cheap. I hope to never again hear the phrase corporate Democrats." And then she has a saying at the bottom from Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh, I'll be darned.
I want to read that to you all, which is, "Be soft. Do not let pain make you hard. Do not let bitterness steal your sweetness."
Is it time for another player to turn the wheel?
Let's spin the wheel and the roundtable roulette. And it's over to Chris Churchill.
I knew you were going to do that. You like it more than me.
Well, I'm not going to choose Brexit because I don't know anything about
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, it's in England.
Yeah.
Thousands
should
of
we talk
away.
2020 politics and who's running, who's not?
Let's do it.
All right, go for it.
Go ahead.
Beto.
Beto's running?
Oh, I would definitely think Beto's going to run.
Beto's going to be a vice presidential nominee. He's not going to be the president.
No, I think he'll be top of the ticket. I think he'll be a contender next year, and you'll see him go to Iowa, you'll see him go to New Hampshire, and I think he is somebody that has some potency for the presidency.
Even though he lost.
Of course. I mean, Abraham Lincoln lost, too.
He didn't lose by
a long time ago, wasn't it?
True.
Okay,
but we're in a different time.
All right, will the current president run for re-election? That's the issue we were just discussing.
He will absolutely run for re-election. You can mark it down that Shartok, who correctly predicted that he would win, now says he will run for re-election, barring the fact that he is either impeached or removed.
Well, what if the economy starts to slow down and you can see that it's going to get worse? Maybe he wants to, quote unquote, leave while he's ahead.
Maybe that's wrong. Maybe that's wrong, and I'm going to tell you why, because the economy is doing extreme...
The engineer told me to move the mic closer to you. I didn't realize I could use it to bludgeon him.
It's doing extremely well.
It is doing extremely well, but it's not going to be.
And nobody gives a damn, is my point.
Oh, people care.
Well, they may care, but his numbers have not deviated, especially among the faithful.
No, but that's the thing he most likes to take credit for. And if it starts to look like it's going to all fall apart, I mean, maybe he doesn't want to be the guy in charge when it happens.
I see.
And, you know, we all only have one life to live, and I'm thinking that at some point he's going to be tired of this and want to move on.
I think he was tired of it very early on. Very early.
It was no longer fun.
So was Hillary running?
That's
a good
question.
So. Now, put yourself in Hillary's place, okay? Ray, put yourself in Hillary's place.
You want me to? Oh, you said ready, not Ray. Okay, good. I'll stay out of this.
Ray?
Yes.
Okay, so you put yourself in Hillary's place. The question, I think, is... You won the election. You got 3 million votes more than your opponent. You are ticked off, you know, and you say, "Why shouldn't I run?" Now, can anybody answer that to her satisfaction? For the betterment of the Democratic Party, you shouldn't run because people are tired of you.
Because you've tried twice and not gotten there, and maybe it is time for somebody else. I mean, that's a valid argument. I do think she would probably get the nomination, though.
Really?
But what about Hillary for VP, though?
What'd you say,
Jeff? Hillary for VP.
Under Beto?
Yeah.
You never know.
You never know.
Yeah.
Because she always said, like, she would like to be president, but she doesn't want to run for president.
Come on.
I don't know. I have trouble seeing her accepting that. Yeah, I do think she would get the nomination. I mean, if you have a field crowded with 20 people, I think it's very plausible that she gets 20-25% of the vote and starts racking up primary wins.
That's a great question, though. Will there be... like the Republicans had in the last presidential runoff.
Sure seems like it.
20 people or more?
Sure seems like it. We could all name 20 people right off the bat who are running or who are sure making noise about running.
But is there appropriate leadership in the Democratic Party that'll say, wait a minute, this is the proverbial circular firing squad. We need to win all this list beforehand.
They don't have that power. There is no one who has the power to say.
I'm not saying power,
but that's what they did last time. I mean, they narrowed the field so much, they kept people from running, and Hillary ended up being the nominee, but it didn't work out for them.
Well.
And will we agree that having so many Republican candidates was bad for the selection process back in 2016?
Well, it depends. I mean, if you accept the logic that we are being ruled by a monster, it was bad.
I mean, if there had been four candidates instead of however many there were, it was 18 or something.
It was 18,
it's very unlikely, I think, that Trump would have been the nominee. I think when you have that many people on stage, the loudest voice gets the most attention, and he sucked up all the oxygen. The same way that Hillary would, for better or worse, would also suck up all the oxygen on a Democratic primary.
As Judy Patrick has so clearly articulated, woulda, shmoulda, woulda. I mean, it wasn't going to happen. You know, you can't tell me that you can tell if there were four candidates or 20 candidates what Donald Trump's chances would have been. You just can't.
Well, he only got 40% of the primary vote, right? Even at the...
That's still
even
plurality.
It is, but, I mean... And that 40% includes all the, you know, all the primaries at the end where he was just racking up huge numbers.
Sure.
I mean, there was always more people voting against him than voting for him. And I think, I mean, we'll never know.
With Hillary, a lot of people were voting against Hillary or not voting at all.
This from CNN. Saudi protesters seek death penalty for five.
Prosecutors,
I'm so sorry. You're right, Judy, as always.
Protesters in Saudi Arabia.
seek death penalty for five in Khashoggi killing.
Yes.
Now, you can imagine. Let's say the prince did send those guys over there to do this. Which it does.
Assuming it's even the same five people.
Right. Or just five random people.
Or five other dissidents.
Who happened to be
did not win the game show. You're
well, some of them
were, right.
Some of them were pretty close to this prince, you know. So sorry, you have to die. Why? To protect my reputation.
Or maybe they don't really die. Maybe they just go off and live in hiding somewhere. Yeah. And
like a David Blaine trick. Yeah.
Okay.
Spin the wheel away.
Okay, now that was a nice flashback to 20 minutes ago on the program. I appreciate that very much.
We did talk about that, or did we talk about when we were off the air?
No, we talked about it on the air.
On the air.
We spun the round table roulette.
My wheel spin.
It's time for Alan to go.
No, that's okay, no. Alan. We have I've been informed by our producer, Sarah LeDuc, we have exactly 4 minutes and 40 seconds to go.
Five minutes and 40 seconds,
excuse
radio,
me.
That's a long time. So Joe Bonilla has not yet chosen the project.
Yeah.
Has he?
Not yet.
No, okay.
Spin the wheel.
All right, let's spin it. Go ahead.
There we go.
And the round table roulette, go.
We're going to go with Brexit.
All right.
Chris is not a big fan.
I'm out.
You have
oh, come on, man.
I'm in.
You have service. Go.
All right. Well, no, I mean, you look at right now with Theresa May, and obviously, you know, basically the different PMs are leaving, you know, right now. They're resigning in this. I mean, there's significant global chaos that will come through this decision. So does she keep the prime ministership is going to be a big question.
Sure.
Chris, looking less likely this morning.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Chris, your turn.
I agree 100%.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
That was beautifully put.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah.
But it's true. The pound is starting to fall already today, and that will affect all global markets. I think the issue with Theresa May's proposal is that Brexit supporters didn't think this was happening fast enough or more conclusively enough, and that England definitely wants to, these supporters want England to be a standalone country from now.
Sure.
And we still have unresolved these issues about the border between Northern Ireland and the rest of Ireland.
Right.
And there's no indication that that has been resolved at all.
No.
And ultimately, they have to decide this by March.
Right.
And it seems like there's a possibility there's going to be no consensus. And so it's going to be we're just going to go by the seat of our pants on what's happening.
Right. Chris, over to you.
Well, I agree 100% once again. That was lovely.
You know, when I recently was in Scotland visiting, and we stayed on a sheep farm, and the sheep farmers were very upset because they were getting the English market was getting flooded with lambs from outside the country, which was making it very difficult for them to get a good price for their lambs, and so they wanted some protection from the rest of the world. It was a classic example of what's happening over there.
Well, I mean, it will be interesting to see, too, also, you know, could this actually allow for Labour to actually finally take over the majority in Parliament, too? And that's the other part of it, too. I mean, if you start seeing this continued chaos in the Conservative Party, that could also help Labour in the next election.
All right.
Doesn't Parliament make a White House press conference look tame? Because most people laugh at each other.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. And Alan, we only have about 2 minutes.
Okay.
Slightly less than 2 minutes for you to read those letters.
So it's a lot more than we need.
You're on the clock.
Okay.
And go.
Hank says, you may think the economy is doing well. You obviously have nothing in the stock market, or you wouldn't say that.
Down 200 points yesterday.
The market is a good indicator about the economy, and it's sinking. And this is Hank from Tilson.
Is that not because oil prices are plummeting? I mean,
I'm not so sure the stock market's the best measure of the economy.
No, it's not, because most people don't have all that much money in it. However, I do, so Hank is dead wrong on this thing.
Oh, boy. Says, sorry,
you
Hank.
Obviously have nothing in the stock market. I have a fair amount of money in the stock market. My pension, I'll never be able to retire. And
oh, let's do a GoFundMe so you can retire, all right?
Okay. Thank you, Hank. And Paul says, Democratic ticket, Deval Patrick for president, Beto for vice president. Well, I wrote a column for this weekend in which I think Deval Patrick would be an ideal candidate for president. Why, you ask?
Why?
Well, first of all, he's a remarkable human being. I love the guy. I've gotten to know him, and I'm telling you, he's smart. He also happens to be African-American, which I think proves to be very important in terms of turning out people in the election. I think that's part of why Obama won. So he was a great governor. Great. G-R-E-A-T. Okay, we have to go, right?
We do. And thank you for that, Alan Shartok. Thanks to Judy Patrick, Joe Bonilla, Chris Churchill, and Alan Shartok, and Joe Donahue. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, we loved having you here.
Let's never do
it
again.
Thank
you. Oh, boy, there's a lot more roundtable ahead, and I wish I knew what it was, but it'll be okay.
Sarah will help you.
We'll just go to break.
Worth listening.